Welcome everyone to Freedom Law School's conference call on this February 4th, 2016. This is Peyman Mutahedeh, the founder and president of Freedom Law School. Okay. Hello, let's try it again now. Can you guys hear me? Okay, welcome everybody to Freedom Law School's weekly conference call on this Thursday, February 4, 2016. This is Peyman Mutahedeh, the founder and president of Freedom Law School and your host for this program. I founded Freedom Law School 20 years ago, folks. In 1996, in January 1996, to help educate the average ordinary American and empower you on how to live free of oppressive taxation and control. Why? Well, I came from Iran myself in 1977 at the age of 14, and I had thought, then I came to the land of the free and the home of the brave. But unfortunately, I found myself in the land of the meek and the home of the indentured. I found out that America is not a free country like I was told it was. I was told this was a country where the U.S. Constitution was not violated, as opposed to the communist former Soviet Union and other dictatorship countries where the constitution of that country of the government was violated by the governments. Then I heard in 1992 that the income tax is fraud, that it's voluntary, that the average American does not have to file and pay the federal income tax. I found that quite amazing, such a claim that anybody would make, because, you know, everybody knows that most everybody pays income tax. Unless you're extremely poor, you're supposed to pay income tax. But I was open-minded enough to go listen to a meeting, a presentation of this lady named Tina, who was on a conference call on a radio program back then in L.A. on Billy Handel's show. And I went to her meeting, and I listened and I watched. And I was quite amazed what she showed me was the U.S. Constitution. She also relied upon the IRS code. She also relied upon the IRS's own publications, all concluding and showing that the average American is not required to file and pay the federal income tax. Wow. What an amazing surprise. What a surprise I had. So I thought, man, people need to know about this. It's right there, black and white. You know, they cannot do these things without violating the law of the Constitution, and there is no law requiring you to file income tax to begin with. So that's what led me to educate myself first about all of this. And then as a result of that, I started educating other people about the U.S. Constitution, the law, and your rights, and how to live free of oppressive taxation and control. What I did, folks, is I went to any and all kind of a patriot meetings that I could come across. You see, back then, folks, in the early 1990s, there was no internet. You could not just go on your computer or search engine and type in something you're interested in and see what comes up. Oh, no. Back then, I found out in America there was a freedom movement, an underground, above-ground freedom movement in America. In the land of the free, there's a freedom movement. Isn't that incredible? That we need to even have a freedom movement in this country That's supposed to be free. It's underground in that you don't hear about it on the television, radio, and then above ground in that they're not hiding anything. They're all open about it. They're not trying to be secretive about it. So patriot leaders of all sorts, educators, teachers would always come make a stop in Southern California where I lived and did seminars. And I attended these seminars and learned as much as I could from these leaders about the U.S. Constitution, the laws, and what to do, how to live free, how to make sure the IRS leaves you alone, how to make sure that government agents of various kinds leave you alone in peace. That's all we want. You know, we don't want any government benefits or handouts. We just want to be left alone. The right to be left alone is a fundamental, natural right. So, that being the case, it took me several years of taking every Patriot Leader's seminar, live, recorded, audio tape, whatever I could find. I took all of their seminars I could find until I could learn everybody's best information. So I did that for several years, and during that process, one of the guys I met showed me how to use the law library. We were doing a class. I started a class that eventually became Freedom Law School's first course, which is called A Practical Road to Freedom from Oppressive Taxation and Control, Level 1. Okay, the Level 1 course we call it for short. So that class, I started actually with these couple other people. Actually, first time was with three people. A guy named Dan Barger, Anthony Hargis, and Bill McCarty. And I had them teach the classes more than I meek, because they knew more than me, because they were around this stuff in this freedom movement longer than me. And then eventually those guys dropped out. I kept teaching at classes. And the idea was to be a remedial course, a basic overview of the law, rights, and the U.S. Constitution to help the average American who came to our monthly meetings, patriotic monthly meetings, to get our rights and our country back, to learn a little bit about the Constitution, our laws, and what they can and should do to live free of oppressive taxation and control while we work with each other to restore freedom in America. And those classes that I did, folks, I did them for 9 weeks in a row, once a week, 7:30 to 9 to 10:30 p.m. I did them once a week, and they were about 3 hours long with breaks. And every 9 weeks after I'd done those classes, I would start then another class the following week, another 9 week series. So that just kept going every 9 weeks. And eventually, by the end of 1995, I felt that these courses I've developed, been very useful, very informative. I got good feedback from people that I finally started to make them available under a brand name. People recognize it. I thought, let's start a school called Freedom Law School. Why freedom? Because what I teach is about freedom. I'm promoting freedom. Freedom and responsibility are two sides of the same coin. And then it was a school about the law. Not about the birds and the bees, about the trees. No, about law. Freedom Law School. And not a law school for someone to go to practice the business of being a lawyer or an attorney. No. A law school for the average American to learn about their rights and how to live free. And that's how Freedom Law School got to be started, folks, 20 years ago. And so many accomplishments have been made by Freedom Law School, folks. You know, just the fact alone that Freedom Law School is the longest running and the most successful tax honesty Freedom Law group in the history of the movement tells you a lot right there. There's been many groups that have come and gone without much success. But Freedom Law School is still expanding, going, moving forward, and having more victories against the IRS. And the IRS, the government, cannot shut us down. See, the government will want to attack you and shut you down and don't talk. Don't speak about these things. Don't have people question authority. Don't have people think. Don't have people wonder what's going on. Maybe they've been lied to. Don't let them even think about that. Let them just simply be happy, content slaves that don't think, don't question government, don't question authority, don't read. Okay? And that's what they want. They want docile slaves like cows, like sheeple. Well, folks, America was not made for sheeple. America was made for a people of freedom mind, freedom attitude, with courage, with convictions, with conscience, to want to do the right thing. Well, folks, Freedom Law School has not come a long way. And after what I did after several years of doing classes that I was teaching, and not only I taught classes myself personally, I developed more classes, I also brought other experts from across America who had successful backgrounds and track record against governmental agencies, in particular the IRS. What I did, I brought these experts, people that were my teachers, and had them teach the classes with me on these various subjects, because I wanted to learn from the very best of the best out there. And I wanted to put out material from the best of the best out there. That is what Freedom Law School was founded upon. Being the best and how to live free was real, solid, useful, winning education. So in mid-1990s, that's what Freedom Law School was about. 1996, 97, 98, I put more of these courses together. And then I started doing seminars across the country in 1998. You know, other leaders were around in the movement, people like Urban Schiff, Lynn Meredith, and others who used to do travel across the country and teach material. And I knew Freedom Law School had better, useful, winning information. And it needed to get out there to people beyond Southern California where I lived. So that's why I did seminars for several years across America. And I traveled, folks, to over 30 states, probably about 35 states in the union I've been to. That's right, folks. The seminars in most states in America. And I would do seminars Saturday and Sunday in two different cities. And then, after doing that, folks, in 2001, you know, I was persuaded to also make a modification to Freedom Law School's program. The modifications I came across were about not just educating people, but also providing people assistance. People wanted help. People wanted someone to be there to back them up. People didn't want to be alone. Okay? People wanted someone to make sure that they win in tyranny. I heard that from Dr. Robert Clarkson, the late, great Robert Clarkson. Dave Willington, a great freedom paralegal, still around in New Mexico, as well as some students of mine who they said, Paymon, you ought to do more than just educate and just teach alone. That is good. But you ought to provide all this assistance and support that people want and need. So if that's what people wanted, I said, that's fine. Freedom Law Lover is still committed and believes that, number one, it's about education. If you're not educated, you don't know what's going on, you don't know what to do, you're not going to be free. You got to know about the law and your rights. No matter who's on your corner, you still got to know what's going on. Because otherwise, you will not have the peace of mind you want and need. So here we are. And then what interesting thing happened, Bobby. In the way, I got a call from my friend Bill Conklin, who told me a special agent with the Criminal Investigation Division of the IRS had called him, heard about income tax being voluntary, being fraud, and that he wanted to check it out himself, individually. And that he gave me my number. He said, look for his call. His name is Joseph Bannister. He's going to be calling you shortly, and he wants to know, really, is income tax voluntary? Is it fraud? So Joe Bannister, sure enough, called me later that night. And we spoke many times over. And I helped educate this man. I gave him a complimentary copy of Freedom Law School's first course, which is called Ape to Freedom, from Oppressive Taxation and Control, Level 1. I gave him the course. And he got introduced also through me to other people like Bill Benson, and the man who verified the 16th Amendment of the Constitution was not properly ratified. So after a year of his own independent research about this issue, Mr. Bannister decided to write a book about income tax. He told me, Paymon, I want to write a book. I said, that's a great idea, Joe. I'll support you any way I can. And he did. He wrote a book called Investigating the Federal Income Tax. And then I helped edit it for him, proofread it for him. And then at the end of 1998, without any notification to me, others, or any planning, he gave that to superiors at the IRS, Criminal Investigation Division office in San Jose, California, and asked him to refute his book. His conclusion in his book, that no law requires the average American to file and pay the federal income tax. And so, the IRS, however, failed to answer Mr. Bannister's request. He had asked the IRS to refute his report because that was his duty. He took an oath to uphold and defend the U.S. Constitution. The IRS Commissioner Rosati has told his employees that if they see any malfeasance, anything wrong, abuse of power, doing things wrong, they should report it. They should do something about it. And Mr. Bannister, as he says, he was gullible enough to believe all those empty words. Because when he did write to the IRS about all that, his book was sent to the IRS headquarters in Washington, D.C., to the Criminal Investigation Division office. And you be sure you know that it must have also gone to the IRS's legal counsel, the lawyers. At the end, they told Joe Barron, said, we will not respond to your request. We're going to give you a week off and think about it, you know, and then, and if you want, you can resign. Okay. And that's what Mr. Joe Bannister did. He said, you know, I cannot continue my doing what I'm doing and be in conformity with my oath to uphold the Constitution. Because he took that oath seriously. Folks, all public servants in government, president, congressmen, senators, all government employees, bureaucrats, legislatures, judges, they're all. In order for them to take the job, they must take an oath to uphold and defend the U.S. Constitution. And Mr. Matt Bannister took that oath very seriously. And he said, how can I enforce a non-existent law? How can I enforce the income tax on the average ordinary American when that law doesn't exist in the first place? So he quit, and Freedom Law School published his report and distributed for him out there on income tax. We put him on speak publicly for the first time, but everybody could see him at our excuse me, March 1999 Freedom Rally. And folks, the rest, as they say, is history. With the People Foundation, a nonprofit foundation in New York, took Mr. Bannister to Washington, D.C. several times to debate the IRS and the government lawyers, that's the U.S. Department of Injustice, to discuss the legality of income tax. Congress was invited. The White House was invited. IRS, U.S. Department of Justice lawyers, but none of them would ever show up. None of them would even bother to come and say, hey, look, you're wrong. Here is the law. In piece of paper, look at it. Here's a law that requires the average American to file and pay the federal income tax. See? Oh, wow. Really? Why would they not show up? Because they knew there was no law. The government officials know there is no law. They just don't care about the law. In fact, you know, the economic advisor of the White House, at that time was Bill Clinton was the president, he told the head of the Swedish People Foundation, Mr. Bob Schultz, that, this is a quote, the legality of the income tax is not a high priority item at the White House. And we will not participate in any conference on the subject. Think about that for a minute, folks. The legality of income tax is not a high priority item at the White House. I would think that legality of everything the government does is of number one importance, of the utmost importance. The government is supposed to enforce the law. That's their job. Yet, they break the law themselves. Then what do we have here? If you have a government of lawbreakers, they don't care if what they do is legal or not. What do we have? We have a bunch of lawbreakers taking over our government. And what's another word for a lawbreaker? A criminal. An outlaw. We have an outlaw government that doesn't care if the income tax is being enforced on Americans legally or not. They just want the money. To the politicians, it's only about the money. To the government bureaucrats in the IRS and the lawyers in the Department of Injustice, it's all about the money. To the judges even, the supposedly third branch of the government, the independent third branch of the government. That's supposed to be a check on abuse of power of the other two branches. Guess what? They don't care about legality income tax either. To them, it's about the money as well. They want the money. They need the money. The law be damned. As long as the average American does not know and does not care, who cares? As long as we got more and more Americans dependent upon governments with food stamps, social security checks, government aids and subsidies, and government subsidized home mortgage programs, government subsidized student loans, tax credits, and all these other benefits of the government that ties people to the government, and that's their number one concern. Hey, why worry? You know, why sweat it? Who cares? Most everybody seems to be happy and content. Well, people are not happy necessarily, but they don't know where the source of the problem is. They know something's wrong with our government. They just can't point their finger at it. Well, Freedom Law School is pointing the finger exactly where it is. We have a system where the major two parties are not much different. There are very minor differences between them. And the major candidates of both parties are the same. Okay, the higher you go up the food chain of politics, the more you need to reach out to people, 300 million Americans, to get your votes. And the more you need money to get your name out there, to get a message out there, for people to know who you are. And so you need to raise money from the big banks, corporations, and other rich individuals and entities, so you can get your name out there with advertising on radio, television, okay, in print magazine, in print, to get your name out there. So you become owned by the very people that they pay you. They're not supposed to be any buying, but they actually do buy the politicians in practice. So by the time you get a choice between Bill Clinton or Bush or Obama or Romney or McCain, they're all about the same. They're all for the status quo, very minor differences. And the media in this country, the media is supposed to report things truthfully, let you know the truth about what's going on out there in the world, in America, unbiased, unvarnished, plain truth, so you can judge things intelligently by yourself. Well, guess what? The major media in America is also owned by the very same group of people. The big banks and corporations own them. They own the politicians. They own the media. They own the bureaucrats because it would control the president. And judges are anointed, put in place with the president and the Congress members, so they're political too. The judges are also politicians. So as a result, they all are creatures of the system. They all get it because of money and influence and corruption. They always got to pay back somebody when they get to be in these positions of power and trust. Positions of power and trust that they abuse, that they don't follow their oath to uphold the U.S. Constitution. So that being the case, folks, this is a problem we got in our country. The abuse of power by public servants. We don't have a real choice. Right now we have in 2016, the last independent candidate, truly independent major candidate who believed in freedom. Okay, just exited the race. Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, the son of Congressman Ron Paul of Texas, he just quit the race for presidency. So all the choices we have for presidency now are not much difference. There's not more than a dime of difference between these candidates. They're all a little bit better in this way, and a little bit worse in the other way. So Freedom Law School has been teaching about all this since and helping people since 2001. And the income tax is at the core of these issues that I teach. Now, it's well known that the income tax is a tax on the average American. The average American, their source of income, livelihood, is their wages or salaries. Most Americans are, the greatest number of people are wage earners. They get paid hourly. And then you got a large number of people that get paid salaries. Right? Yes. And after that, then you got people making income from things like, you know, commissions. And then you have people have their own small businesses, perhaps. And then those are the biggest source of income for most Americans. Not many people make their livelihoods from, dealing in property or real estate or renting or real estate or royalties or dividends and a lot of other stuff. So the tax on income, the income tax, is primarily a wage earner's tax, a tax on wages and salaries. It's well known. It's well understood. And most Americans who file income tax are wage earners and salaried employees. So, are these individuals required to file income tax? Are you required to file and pay the income tax? Well, we can go to the IRS's own book. It's called the IRS Code for the answers. You see, in America, in the federal government system, you have, remember, the states have their own set of laws, and the federal government has its own set of laws. The federal laws are in 50 different categories or titles. They are called the United States Code, abbreviation USC. And the title, or category 26, is on taxes. So, 26 United States Code, or 26 USC, is the IRS's code, the IRS's law. The income tax laws are all in there. And there's many, many sections and numerous more, even subsections in there, folks. I got a couple of copies of the IRS code right here in my house. Folks, it's toilet paper thin. Okay, and it still has tiny fonts, 10,000 sections, and about 3 inches thick. Congress, legislatures write very long, detailed, convoluted laws that require a PhD level, doctorate level reading and writing skills to be able to read and understand many of these laws. So, Bob, that's okay. We're going to go make that easy for you. We're going to go online on your computer right now and look up these laws and take it from there. You see, if you go on your computer and type in 26 space USC 61, you're going to get some results will come up. The first one is from Cornell Law University. Usually when you type in laws in a computer, that's the same one that the first one that comes up. There are others that come up. The second one will come up from FindLaw. For me, I use Google. It has the same thing. And the third one that comes up comes from the Government Printing Office, the United States Government Publishing or Printing Office, GPO, Government Printing Office, has a website. And that law comes up, Title 26, Section 61. You can have it in a PDF or text. Either way, it'll come up, you can read it. Okay? So, folks, all laws are so easy to find, folks. All you got to do is just go on your internet search browser and go and find the laws. So, that's what I did. So let's go to the Government Printing Office, the Government Publishing Office. Okay, this is themselves. We're not You know, there's no doubt this is the law. Okay? You can click on the one that says text. Okay? It says text version. You can add it or PDF. Click on the text button. And you see on the top left of the page, it comes up. It says 26 U.S.C. United States Code, 2011 edition, mine says. Right? Section 61, gross income defined. Section 61, you know, section A and then B. Well, the section B is the only cross references. But section A, you know, it says, except as otherwise provided in this subtitle, gross income means all income from whatever source derived, including the following items. Now, what's in parentheses but not limited to is not part of the law. What's in parentheses is not a part of the law. It's commentary. It's added to make it easier for you to understand the law, what it's there. Now, and they list 15 different things there for you. Now, I want you to also do the same process with another section of the law. 26 space U.S.C. 63. Okay. It's a taxable income. See, section 61 in gross income, taxable income is section 63. The third one again here is the government printing office version. Right? And let's go to the text. I click on the text one that says on top of the page. There it is. Section 63, taxable income defined. And it says, in its part A, except as provided in subsection B, for the purposes of this title, the term taxable income means gross income minus the deductions allowed by this chapter. So what's taxable, what you got to pay tax on, the taxable income, is right here. It's defined. And the definition is very simple. You start with gross income, and then you take some deductions off of it. Okay? And, of course, the deductions, you know, are listed later on section C2. They'll list the deductions, so forth and so on. But we don't need to go to deductions. We can just focus on taxable income because that's what it's about. Okay? So, in fact, you see in section B, they talk about the term taxable income in quotes. It says in the case of an individual who does not elect to itemize his deductions for the taxable year, for the purposes of this title, the term taxable income means adjusted gross income minus this and that, the other. So here we go again, the term taxable income. So taxable income is based upon gross income. If you have no gross income, you could not have any taxable income either. It's that simple. So let's see what's in gross income. Section 61A, general definition of gross income, at least lists 15 different things. Let's go from the bottom. Number 15, income from an interest in an estate or trust. Well, how many people have income from an estate or trust? Very few Americans. Income in respect of a dissident. That means somebody passed away and you got their income, their money. Well, that doesn't happen very often. Maybe one of our parents passes away. We get some of the stuff we get from our parents, their pension or retirement account or investments, but that's it. That's a twice in a lifetime situation for most people, if at all. Because very often people die without no much income. Number 13, contributive share of partnership gross income. Ah. If you have a business partnership, your share. Okay. Number 12. Income from discharge of indebtedness. That means if the bank loaned you money, for example, never paid them back, they took the house, and the house was not worth what you owed the bank, the rest of that money the bank discharged as like a gift to you, as a they gave you money, not a loan. It became a money they gave you because you never paid them back. That's what this is. Number 11, pensions. 10, income from life insurance and endowment contracts. 9, annuities. 8, alimony and separate maintenance payments. 7, dividends. 6, royalties. Folks, let me ask you, how many Americans have money in the stock market to get dividends? Not many. How many Americans have an invention or an oil well or gas well in their backyard or property to get royalties from, or they made movies or audio recording of some sort? Very few. Okay. Okay, then you have interest, number 4. Number 3, gains derived from dealings in property. Number 2, gross income derived from business. Number 1, compensation for services, including fees, commissions, fringe benefits, and similar items. Okay. Well, what's missing in this list? Is there something missing in this list as big as the elephant? Yes, there is. There's a big elephant. That's wages and salaries. Is anybody going to tell me with a straight face that the Congress of the United States, with all the lawyers they got, smart, intelligent, educated lawyers, they're going to discuss what they want to tax, taxable income, and it's all based upon gross income. And I listed all these 15 different things to mention the most common form of income, that's wages and salaries. I mean, that's a ridiculous proposition. Of course, you know, the reason that the wages and salaries are not taxed because they are not intended to be taxed. Congress never intended to tax the wages or salaries of Americans. Period. End of story. But guess what, folks? There's a saying that says that figures don't lie, but liars figure. The judges came up with a solution for this problem. The government lawyers in the United States Department of Injustice and IRS lawyers, when faced with this issue brought up by patriotic Americans, convinced the fellow judges on the bench that wages and salaries are part of compensation for services. Number one, see? You're getting compensated for your labor. See, there it is. Compensation for services. Really? So, including fees, commissions, fringe benefits, and similar items. How many people make money from fees? Very few. And I know, like, in Notary Public, when they notarize your signature, they get a fee for doing that. A minister or public official giving you an oath of marriage, they make a fee for doing that. But most people don't make them life or income on fees. How about fringe benefits? How many people even have a fringe benefit? Does anybody have? Most people don't have a fringe benefit at the job. Oh, maybe you work at McDonald's and get 10% discount on your food you buy while you're working at your breaks, or something like that. Oh, you know, but what else is there? Most people don't have fringe benefits. There isn't much there. And even similar items was listed. It meant to be a catch-all phrase, similar items. Okay, but Congress again forgot to list, was too stupid to list salaries and wages. Is that really possible? Are the Congress people that stupid? Are the government lawyers that stupid, that forgetful? They could have put wages and income item number 16 of IRS Code Section 61A. Should have been really number one. Number one should have been wages and salaries. Boom. Number two, other compensation for services, including fees, commissions, fringe benefits, and similar items, and then everything else. But no, they didn't do that. Salary and wages was not listed as one of the 16 things in IRS Code Section 61A. And on top of that, part, you know, Section 61A1, where it lists compensation for services, even there, Congress mentioned very specific forms of income, like commissions, fees, and fringe benefits. But yet again, Congress forgot to include wages and salaries in there. Really? Do you believe that? Do you buy that? I don't buy it, folks. It's well known that if something's meant to be taxable, the law needs to clearly show it. It's a very well-known principle of law upheld by courts. You not just assume or presume something is taxable. That'll be all right there, very specifically mentioned, and is not mentioned here. But like I said, the government-based, paid-biased courts have clean enough in there that your wages and income are, and salaries are taxable. That's the end of the story. We just let the judges write the law. We just let the judges change the law. We just let the judges create a law that does not exist. That's what's going on. And the average American is being messed around. Now, if you go to Freedom Law School's website at livefreenow.org, you're going to find the more information on this issue. Go to livefreenow.org. On the top center, click on to educational materials. When you click on educational materials, many different articles will come up. Okay? Right now, you got to go to the second page to find this article, which is going to be on the top of the first page very soon. It's a very important one that I want you to have. It will be on top. But if you go to the second page, there's an article called What is Income? Okay? You click on What is Income, and you click on the part that says Continue Educating Yourself. And you see the actual statutes passed by Congress, okay, that talk about wages and salaries and income, these issues, okay? This is the first part you see is from 1894. Folks, this is the exact language of the law before the 16th Amendment, before the income tax on the American person. Right? It says in Section 27, go to line 3, you know, but the taxes upon the gains, profits, and income. Okay? They talk about gains, profits, and income. Okay. From what? If you keep reading, it says derived from any kind of property, rents, interest, dividends, or salaries, or from any profession, trade, employment, or vocation. Okay, see, employment is there. Salaries are there. Okay, Well, this law was based upon foreigners. This was meant to tax foreigners coming to America. That's what they were taxing, salaries and the wages of the people there, subject to law. Now, there's some constitutional developments that happened. Anyhow, then we moved on to after the 16th Amendment was ratified, supposedly, but it wasn't, the Income Tax Amendment. You go down to the next highlighted section of this article, and you see the October 1913 laws. And there, they're talking about gains, profits, and income from salaries and wages or compensation for personal service. Wow. Congress listed salaries, wages, separate, and separate from compensation for personal service. So Congress knew that salaries and wages are not compensation for personal service. That Irish Code Section 61A talks about. See, salaries and wages are not compensation for personal service. Okay, so let's go further down to another law. Okay, if you go down the next hottest section, okay, what do we see in there? This is Section 32A, the next time the law was changed or developed, income tax law. Again, look at the bold section. It talks about gains, profits, and income derived from salaries, wages, or compensation for service. So here we have salaries and wages are separate from compensation for personal service. Let's go to next section, 1916 laws, section 1200. Again, you see that go in the bold part, gains, profits, and income derived from salaries, wages, or compensation for personal service. They make a distinction every time between salaries, wages, and compensation for personal service. Next, let's go down to Section 213. This is the 1918 laws. And again, it's all about gains, profits, and income. Right? Gains, profit, and income. Profit and income derived from salaries, wages, or compensation for personal service. You go to the Revenue Act of 1921, you find, the same thing going on. Okay? Let's see what's going on here. Now this one's a little bit different. They talk about the President of the United States, but that doesn't matter. The issue is gains, profit, income derived from salaries, wages, or compensation from personal service. There's a distinction. 1924, same thing. You keep going down this article, folks, that Congress of the United States knew every time they mentioned salaries and wages separate and independent of compensation for personal service. So what are these courts doing when they say that wages and salaries are part of compensation for personal services? They are lying. These judges are committing treason on American people by deliberately and knowingly misinterpreting the laws. So, folks, I invite you to get this information, this education to your friends, family members, co-workers. Let them see it for themselves. Give it especially to IRS agents, lawyers, government lawyers, judges, House of Representative members, senators, anybody of influence, business owners, anybody, folks, get them out there. Look, read. Don't believe me. Tell them, don't believe me. Your wages and salaries are not subject to the income tax. Here it is. If they can show you wrong, show me. I'm happy to be corrected. But these are actual laws. Their words, word by word, that I've been quoting for you. So, folks, having answered those this issue for you, Now, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to the next part of this conference call. Like I said, Freedom Law School offers courses to help you live free, understand the law and your rights. I'm also available for private one-on-one private consultations to go over your situation to assist you. I've also put together a program like the Royal Freedom Package that includes assistance and support in getting all the letters written for you to respond back to IRS and the courts in your IRS income tax cases to get these thieves and crooks in the IRS off of your back. And folks, Freedom Law School, I've been winning. Our students are winning. There's many, many victories you see on our website. Many, many of them. And there's more I haven't even put on there. So there it is, for folks, for you. What I'm going to do now is answer your questions tonight. If there's nobody with any questions, folks, then I'll end the call. And the class is done. If they have questions, I'll be able to answer, elaborate on these issues, or answer your personal questions. You don't have to have, you know, pay me for anything, folks. I'm here to help you tonight at these conference calls of Freedom Law School for free. So let's see if our caller, from area code 424, has a question. Call from area code 424. If you have a question, please announce yourself at this time.
Arthur Jupiter in Los Angeles.
Yes, Jupiter.
Hi. I had sent you some questions regarding 2800C letter that my employers would not recognize the 3402N to maintain my exempt status until they get a letter from the IRS forcing me to be high tax as a single person. I'm a married person.
Right, right. Yes. I remember your email with those questions. So let me tell everybody else what happened to you, my friend. You're working at a company. You're a wage earner, correct, Jupiter?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you used to have, what did you have withholding on your paycheck? What did you put on your W-4 before?
Had exempt.
Okay. You put on an exam. That's right. And 3402N as a Nancy allows you to do that. Okay. For employees incurring no income tax liability. But the IRS, when they get the W-2s from the employers, which are issued wrongfully against you because your income obviously is not taxable income. When the employers are wrongfully persuaded to send out these W-2s to the IRS and report what you got paid, your wages, as taxable income. Then the IRS gets these reports and sees, wait a minute, Jupiter does not have any withholding or very little withholding of income tax from his paycheck. So what they do, the computer program, the IRS, writes a letter to the employer saying, look, we want you to withhold from this person's pay at the rate of single zero. Now, by law, if you're single, they're supposed to give you that. If you're married, you get another one. Even if you are subject to the tax, if your income was taxable, they are supposed to let you claim yourself and your wife and your children. But the IRS tells the employer, don't even do that. Nope, do not even allow one for himself, which is ridiculous. How can they have zero when you're obviously allowed to one even for yourself? Well, the IRS came up with this program, what they call this a lock-in letter. They literally lock in on you, zoom in on you, and force your employer to force you to over-withhold from your paycheck, assuming that your wages was income, which is not. Now, extra money has been stolen from your paycheck, and in order for you to stop this stealing, the IRS says, aha, now that I got you, but where I want you, you have to file back tax returns for the last several years, declaring your wages as income. So, and declaring you owe us money. You owe the IRS money now. They want you to file for the last 3, 4, 5, 6 years, depending on your situation. At least 3 years. Yep, you must file and declare that you owe the IRS more money. And then they see how many wife and kids you get, all that, and tell your employer, okay, you can adjust that to 2 or 5 or whatever number the IRS thinks you're entitled to. How long did you put with on your paycheck? Did you put exempt, by the way, Jupiter?
I unknowingly didn't know that I could file exempt until I realized that I was not a foreigner or non-resident alien. So I had placed exempt because I needed to. I needed money today versus tomorrow to make ends meet. I'm a victim from the financial crisis, and I got into a different field, and I needed to do exempt to survive, actually. And so I got a promotion, and the promotion is more money, but the letter from the IRS came, forcing me to send them my W-4 and my pay stub, which I don't want to send to them.
Okay. I understand why I did that. Is needed to survive. You gotta feed your wife. You feed your family. I totally understand. You have a right to survive. You know, you need that money to survive and feed your family before the government bureaucrats and politicians.
Right.
They have right to your money. You're not a slave. You work for yourself and your family.
But it feels like I'm a slave right now.
Yep. This is the modern day slavery. That's what we got. We get modern day slavery. And the United States government, the IRS, is a great grand slave master who've turned your employer into a junior slave master, and you're the slave. And the great slave master, IRS, is telling your employer to steal money from your paycheck so that the great slave master can force you back into slavery, force you to fill out 1040 forms, declaring your wages, which are non-income income. So now they can come after you for that taxable income that you claim you owe. See, now you legally owe the IRS money. They're forcing you to owe taxes. That's what the game is about. You don't want to declare and say you owe taxes and pay, but this is going to force you. Okay, that's what they're doing. So the problem is twofold. Number one, the employers, this letter of the IRS really is illegal, as you said yourself. It's in direct violation of IRS Code Section 3402N, like a Nancy. Okay?
So why won't the employers think of the civil, the constitutional right of the employee when you express the law, tell them the law?
Because
if they're a holding agent.
Because they're simply afraid of the IRS. It's that simple. They're afraid. They don't want the IRS to come mess with them. They don't want a big, bad slave master IRS come and mess with them and take the stuff. They say, we're good slave master. We do what we say, master. Just take it easy on me, master. I jump, master. You want me to jump high? I'll jump high. Jump low? I'll jump low. You want me to take Jupiter's money? I'll take it, master. I'll just leave me alone, please. It's that simple. We don't have a government of laws, and the government and the people on equal footing. Okay? And on top of that, there is IRS Code Section 63, 32E. Right. Go type it on your computer. 26 space USC. 63, 32E. You know, most horrible law. I'm going to do it myself. On my computer with you. 26 space USC 63, 32. Right?
Okay, wait a minute. Hold it. I'm getting there.
Okay, take your time. Get your computer browser up, everybody. Google, Yahoo, whatever you use, doesn't matter. Bring it up. Type it on that on your 26 space USC space
6332. 6332. Okay. Got it.
So when you type that in, the second one is the Garmin Printing Office, GPO.gov, section 6332. Okay, click on that. Okay. When you go there, again, it says on top of the page, GPO, U.S. Garmin Publishing Office. This is the Garmin's own official website, United States Garmin's own official website publishing the laws for the public to know, for everybody to know. And if you download the files, formats, text, click on text or PDF is fine. I like text, just quicker. Okay, there it is. Section 6332. Surrender a property subject to levy.
Yeah.
Talks about levy. Okay. Effective honoring levy. See? They treat this as if it's a levy because the employer is doing what the IRS tells them to do. Okay. It's a levy. Okay. Let's read what it says. Read it. Any person in possession of or obligated with respect to property or rights to property subject to levy upon which a levy has been made, who upon demand by the secretary, demand by the IRS, surrenders such property or rights to property or discharge such obligation to the secretary, that's the IRS, or who pays a liability under subsection D1, shall be discharged from any obligation or liability to the delinquent taxpayer and any other person with respect to such property or rights to property arising from such surrender or payments. Wow. What a broad law. Broad law. So, they shall be discharged from any obligation or any liability to you. They consider you the delinquent taxpayer, even though legally you're the IRS, zero. Zero.
Dang.
Yeah. So, the lawyers of the IRS tell the employer, the lawyers of the company, say, hey, listen. You know, the guy cannot sue you. You didn't know that you could not sue Jupiter. You did not know.
I can't sue.
You cannot sue.
Oh,
because they're discharged from liability. Discharged. They have no more obligation or liability to you.
So that's why they can tell me no.
That's why they can tell you no, and they give you the finger, and you cannot go sue them. You go to court. The court will throw out your suit. The court will say, hey, you know, this guy's immune because he only did what the government tells him. The government is now the new Al Capone. Uncle Sam is dead. No more Uncle Sam. We have now Uncle Al Capone. This is it. Uncle Al Capone, the U.S. government now, tells the employer to take Jupiter's money, the victim's money, and they're protected. See? Now, if you go to the section right above that, okay, section D2. D is enforcement of levy, and D2 is penalty for violation. Okay?
I see it.
Okay? Penalty for violation. In addition to the personal liability imposed, first of all, let's go to number one, the extended personal liability. One, any person who fails or refuses to surrender any property or rights to property subject to levy upon demand by secretary shall be liable in his own person and estate to the United States in a sum equal to the value of the property or rights not so surrenders. Wow. In other words, if they don't take your money, steal it, now they're liable themselves. The employer, he now must pay the tax himself. Well, he says, well, I don't want to pay the tax. They have no problem with me. I'm not in this fight. I'm just the agent. I'm the middleman. You know? But I'm caught here in this game. I don't want to be caught, but I am caught in it. If I fail or refuse to steal Jupiter's money, give it to the government, Uncle Al Capone's, then I got to pay the tax myself. I got to pay the money myself. And the next paragraph, section D2, has also a penalty on top of that on the employer. And it says, in addition to the personal liability imposed by paragraph 1, which we just read, if any person required to surrender property or rights to property fails or refuses to surrender such property or rights to property without reasonable cause, like I was in hospital, I was sick, such person shall be liable for a penalty equal to 50% of the amount recoverable on the paragraph 1. So, in short, the employer got to pay the tax and a 50% penalty on top of that. They got to screw on your employer tougher than you. You just want a tax. Him, they want a tax and a penalty, both from them, in case he doesn't steal your money.
May I say one thing, Paymon?
Sure. Yes, this is a Paymon, huh?
Mr. Paymon, I agreed, you know, I had several years that I agreed for a monthly payment. So I'm paying a monthly payment for previous years, and now they have taken half of my salary with this move. And so I'm paying half of my salary is going to them, plus I'm paying for several years on a monthly schedule agreed payment. So I'm getting squeezed on both ends.
Okay, so you filed for the previous years that they make a payment or not? And when, again, did you go exempt on this job? A year ago, 5 years ago? Be more specific, please.
Okay. Well, because I filed exempt for several years, the previous years I was owing a tax. So I decided to settle for a monthly payment covering from 2011 to like 2014, and I paid back like $110 a month for those years. Maybe a little over $4,000, just under $4,000. And so now, just within the last 30 to 40 days, and at my first check, they hit me with this single zero, literally cut half of my salary. This, because it's every month, every pay period, that this amount of money, almost $400, is taken out.
$400 a week or a month?
24 pay periods. They take out almost $400 now. Mm-hmm. They started with the first one just past 15th.
Okay. Got it. Did you file
my
1040 income tax
me.
Returns? Did you file 1040 for 2011 to 14 or not?
I did do that, and I ended up owing because I had filed exempt. I was exempt for that period because I needed to be able to make ends meet.
Right.
Because I couldn't do it
if
I didn't.
So now they want you to file for 2015 also. Call the number
right,
in the IRS.
So now they're restricting me from doing exempt. They're making me go single, the highest tax.
Call that number in Andover, Mass. Hold on. I got the answer. Call the number on the letter, Andover, Massachusetts, and explain that to the person there. Because the ones you filed for the last 3 years, you already did that.
Yes.
You already told them you owe the money, and you're making payment on that. So you met their requirements that they want to force you. They already forced you already. So call them and tell them, look, I've already done what you want me to do. What else do you want me to do? They will look at your situation, your wife, and whatever. How many kids you got? Children you got, Jupiter?
I don't have any. It's just me and my wife.
Okay, so they're going to give you that, you're married, they're going to let you do married, maybe two, but not single zero and not exempt.
And what if you do Schedule C or something, you know, to try to decrease that tax liability?
Schedule C is for someone who's got their own business, and they can have expenses.
Right.
You don't have that. You're a wage earner. That doesn't apply to you.
Right. Okay. So, what can I use this repatriation as a plan or a theory to get back to being an exempt American citizen to get out of this hell?
That would be wonderful if you could do that. But all that is baseless patriot mythology. It's a bunch of wonderful sounding, good feeling theories that are baseless as the Tooth Fairy and Easter Bunny. Okay? Can I go put my tooth under my pillow and request the Tooth Fairy bring you $1 million? Sure. You can do it. You won't work, but you can do it. Because it's baseless. There is no such thing as a Tooth Fairy. And all these patent mythologies you hear out there are a bunch of nonsense that are floating as law. This is the law by force. Uncle Al Capone, former Uncle Sam, has imposed on all of us. See? And these guys don't know about that. They say, oh, that doesn't apply to us because we're sovereigns. I'm a sovereign state citizen, not a U.S. citizen. Oh, I've expatriated out of U.S. citizenship and repatriated back into state citizenship. You know, I'll reclaim my straw man, redemption for value. You know, I don't respond to their letters when they write to me in capital letters because that's a dead corporate fictional entity. I'm a live human being, a sentient human being with upper lowercase my name. I don't use the zip code on my mail. You know, I write my state as not California, but California, not CA on my mail. I'm not in the federal zone. And the bankers of the United States, I've exempted out of it by the loophole back from UCC, Uniform Commercial Code, UCC 1-307 and stuff like that. And I'm not under Admiralty Maritime statutory jurisdiction. I'm back under common law jurisdiction. And I'll recall, I don't consent to these administrative courts they got. You know, I'm in the common law Article 3 courts. And you heard any of this stuff before, Jupiter, right?
Yeah.
Of course you have. Guess what? Because I know, I've been there, I've done that. Way back then, over 20 years ago, just like you, I started also with patriot mythologies. Just what everybody does. Baseless legal theories. There are so many of them out there. But people don't show you how to look up things in the law library for yourself. These theories sound good, feel good, make sense. But so does the Tooth Fairy theory make sense. So does Easter Bunny, but doesn't work. Right? So... You know, I showed you the real law. You looked up for yourself at the government's own websites. Okay?
Yeah.
So there it is. That's the situation, unfortunately. So suggestions I got for you, as soon as you can, all of you folks, start doing anything. You know, the wage earners like Jupiter on the side, some kind of a commission, part-time, on the side income, business of some sort. Work out of your home, commissions, you know, something that's not guaranteed hourly salaried wages, okay? And there's no withholding of any kind, okay? I don't care how small it is, $50 a month, $200 a month, $500 a month. Let us build up, okay? There are opportunities out there. If you don't know any, call me. I know more than one. Okay, they're not guaranteed, but you start doing something that... It's based upon your performance, not just showing up to work and standing there as a security guard or whatever. Okay? Eventually, you can start hopefully making more money that way than this way. And eventually, hopefully, you'll be able to maybe free yourself of this modern-day slavery, wage, salary, wage enslavement, which they impose on people like you, Jupiter, by raw force. This is a modern-day feudal system that's been imposed in America.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to a different job if you want, but they may, in a year or two or three, they may send the same letter to your job. You know? Now, how big is your employer? How many employees does he have? Is he a big company or a small company?
10,000, over 10,000 is the net. It's the second largest company in the United States in the industry that I work in. I'm a security
Yeah, you work
director.
For Yeah, you work for modern day plantation, slave plantation. They won't listen to you. If you work for a small company, maybe the guy's maybe 2, 5, or 20 employees, small guy. Maybe you could talk to the guy, you know, about the situation, you know. But no, those slave plantations, the 10,000 employees, no, you're just a peon. Get out of here. We're just getting another guy. Too much hassle, slave you are. We're going to get more slaves out there who don't have a job, who are happy to be a slave. You know, they want this slavery more, job more than you do. We're going to get one of those guys. Get out of here if you don't like it. You make too much noise. That's why I say try to break away from slavery. Yes.
So even if you submit like an affidavit that talks about, what is it, what do you call it, a certification affidavit that you're not, that you're an American citizen versus a U.S. citizen versus a non-resident alien versus you know, that affidavit that you would submit to your employer, so they know that you're not a foreigner in regards to the tax of a relationship to schedule to the Schedule A, not Schedule A, but you know that you're not associated to income tax as an American citizen. I'm saying this wrong, but an affidavit that you provide your employer.
You know that should work. Affidavit is a statement under oath. And
right, I did that.
But they ignored. Remember, the bottom line is the employer says, look, if I don't do it, I'm going to be in trouble. I owe the money plus penalties. End of story. All the stuff, he says, I don't know. I don't care. I don't want to be owing the IRS money. That's the problem.
Yeah. So just so I understand now, my option is to call IRS. Let them know that I'm married and I have, at least I can get two withholdings, and then less taxes will be taken out. And then the second part is go get a Schedule C or do some other type of work where I can create profit and losses to write against the taxable dollars that I might have to pay at the end of the tax year for 2016.
No, don't worry about losses. Make some money. Gain. Make money. Don't forget about loss. Make some money. Build something on the side. Build some business on the side. I don't care how small it is. $50 a month, $200 a month, $500 a month. Start building something extra on the side. Okay? Eventually free yourself, you know, from that. I don't care if you live in a city or in a country. If you're in this country, try maybe raise some fruits and vegetables, animals and eggs or whatever, sell something. You know, again, but you got to produce and sell something. You either produce something and sell it yourself or get someone else's product and sell it. You know?
Got it.
Become a business owner, okay? You know, and that's what you need to do. I'd give you the number, by the way. If you want to go the way the IRS is on their website, they'll tell you how to handle this thing. Go to bring them on the page on your computer browser, okay? Another page. And type in their IRS lock in letter, four words, IRS lock in letter. Okay.
Yeah.
You type that in, and you're gonna see the first three that came up for me are understanding your 2800 C letter IRS Internal Revenue Service. The first one, January 6, 2016. The second one is for 2015. Click on the first one.
Wait a minute.
Okay.
IRS lock letter. Let's do that again. Okay, got it. The first one I got it. I'm clicking now.
Click on it. Click on it. Tells you what to do. You go to the bottom of the page. You know, it's not that long. And it says they want you to call that toll-free number, 855. It's listed there, 899-2235. Call them and write to IRS's compliance services, withholding compliance unit. That's not that. They want to make you comply. Be a compliant slave. As a slave, comply. Go along with our modern feudal system slavery. And that's the headquarters of the slave master control center. Okay? Call the slave master, and to be a good compliant slave, they want you to call the number, and, you know, they tell you what to do. Basically, you know, they want all that. It's right there. I'm afraid that's all you can do, you know, in your situation temporarily. At least minimize the stealing they're doing from you. Give me money while you're working to do something. For example, you could refer people to Freedom Law School, by the way. You could refer to people to Freedom Law School and get rewarded. Thank you by Freedom Law School.
Right.
Up to $3,000 for every person you refer to Freedom Law School. Cash. Okay?
Okay.
You can refer, right. You know, for the first referral, you can get the beginner's freedom package of Freedom Law School, which is a $900 value. Education, so, you know, there are two Congress of Senators and more. Another two referrals that will get you, if they become a Royal or Simple Freedom Package members, that's what I mean by referrals, you get us the upgrade to a Simple Freedom Package member. Another one more referral gets you a Royal Freedom Package membership. Then after that, you get, you know, for the first two referrals, you get, you know, 10% of each person. That first year membership on a Royal Freedom Package is $600 each, and then next two, 25% or $1,500 each, and then $3,000 each. You can start out on the side, start little by little. But the way you do it, not start making money tomorrow morning or next week, I'm not saying that, but get this information out there. Get the speech of Joe Banister income tax we mail out to you on CD and other information, and give to your friends, family members, coworkers. Tell them, hey, you didn't want to know what's going on out there. You want to be free. You want to know what's going on. You want to be just a slave, keep your head in the sand like I was. You know? Have them listen to it. And then enough of those people are going to get interested. They want to join us too. And it's going to be a win-win thing for you and them. You become free and help them become free.
Okay. Okay.
That's an option.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. And I have one other question I'd like to ask you about is, and I read up on it, that there, when I first got this situation, I was quoting the laws related to Title 26 and 3401, 2, 3, and 4 and whatnot to the Internal Revenue Service. I found out that there's two different companies, the Internal Revenue versus the Internal Revenue Service. Could you talk about that a little bit? Because there's a difference when you want to fight back or talk about laws. One you may have to sue maybe an individual, like a collection agency, versus one administering the regulation and the law.
There is no two IRSs. There's only one.
There is no? Okay.
Nope. That theory is another patriot mythology.
Got it. Okay. There it is. I appreciate it.
All right, my friend. Let me see if I got your questions answered. Let me go to the other people on the call to see if they have any questions. Let's go to area code 916 in California and see if the caller there has a question. If you have a question, call from area code 916. Please go ahead and give me your first name and then go ahead and ask your question.
I'm just listening. Thank you.
You're most welcome, my friend. Let's now go to area code 614 and to see if the call from area code 614 has a question. You got a question from area code 614, my friend? Yes, sir. Give us your first name first.
Jack.
Jack, very good. Jack, how did you hear about Freedom Law School?
I just found you online.
Very good. Very good. And what's in your mind, my friend?
Well, I've been working for this company for quite a few years, and I've filed tax exempt on both my federal and my state ever since I've worked for them, and they've honored that up until this year. And I got a call from them after I filed, because I have to file every year now as tax exempt. And I submitted my forms yesterday, and I got a call from the home office telling me that I could no longer file tax exempt on state because they had changed the state law, but I was still okay as filing tax exempt on federal. And I started thinking about it, and it just seems to me very questionable. It's almost like they're trying to get me to perjure myself.
Well, what state do you live in?
Ohio.
Okay. Well, some states are very extremely broke financially. California, Ohio, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, there's more urban areas, Pennsylvania, these northeastern states, and they're very broke financially. And so they're tightening up on this issue withholding. And apparently that's what Ohio has done. They don't let you file exempt or not have withholding from Ohio. But that's a smaller amount of withholding. IRS is the biggest one.
Yeah, see, the problem with, and I was reviewing the two forms, the IRS form, when you fill it out, says essentially the same thing as the state form. And at the bottom of it, it says, under penalty of perjury, I certify the number of exemptions claimed on this certificate does not exceed the number of exemptions which I am entitled. So it's almost like putting the cart before the horse, because in Ohio, your state tax is determined by what your adjusted gross income is from your federal tax. So on the first line of your state tax, you have to enter what your adjusted gross income is. Well, since I claim zero is zero and I'm exempt on federal, if I were to say on state, now I owe so much money, I would essentially be perjuring myself and implying that I should be paying federal tax also.
Well, the problem is these employers are acting on fear. And states also, you see the laws I just read to you for the IRS? I read the Jupiter, our last caller. Same structural laws states have. They say that, you know, if the government state requests from employer to steal your money, they have to do it. If they don't do it, they'll owe them all the tax, plus penalty.
Mm-hmm.
But if they do take your money, they cannot be sued by you. See, that's the problem. You didn't know about that. That's how corrupt and criminal the system is.
Yeah, yes? I know how bad it's getting. So if I were to tell them I stand on my exemption for federal and state, and I was not going to change my form because they're trying to get me to change my state, what do you think they would do?
It's a good million-dollar question. I don't know. I'm not a brain reader.
Mm-hmm.
They might just treat it as if you didn't give them one at all and withhold maximum from your paycheck, as if you gave them zero or one. They might do that. I don't know what they may
do.
You know, you may want to put some higher number, 5 or 10 or whatever, exemptions for the state. I don't know.
Yeah, they're recommending that I put one exemption and just file for the state as being taxable. But I would still be tax exempt on my federal. But see, what I'm worried about is they may come back to me and say, hey, look, if you're paying state tax, obviously you must own federal.
Who come after you, the employer or the IRS?
I guess it could be either one.
Well, that's a different situation.
It seems like they're trying to put me into a perjurious situation where I'm essentially applying that I owe money, because in a state where your taxes are derived by what you pay in your AGI from your federal, I'm saying that I owe money to the state, so it almost implies that I owe money to the federal, even though I've claimed exempt. So I'm kind of worried that they may just trying to ensnare me, essentially, by drawing me in and saying, look, you can pay, you know, $30-$40 a month on your state, but you're still exempt on federal.
So what you do when you fill out that form, above your signature, put under, I'm signing this form under duress by force. I want to do exam, but I'm not being allowed to. So I'm doing this instead by force. I'm told that only I can only do this, not that.
I used to do this because I've been doing it for about 20 years, and I used to write on the bottom of the form, UD, under duress, UCC-1-207, which is what you mentioned to the last caller.
Right. You know, UCC has nothing to do with it. UD is okay, but you want to mention what that means. I didn't know what the word duress was until I was 30 years old, got in the Patriot Movement. Most people didn't know what the word duress means.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, under duress. And explain, I don't want to do this thing, but I'm being forced to do it. Put the words
okay.
that anybody can understand.
So you don't think they would object to that?
No. Do you? Yeah, you have a right to object. As long as you fill out the form the way they want to, you're not exempt. You can put something else on. They put 5 or 10 allowances, which may effectively minimize or stop any state withholding anyhow. But you're doing what they're forcing you to do. It's not voluntary.
Okay.
If you do something on the force with a gun to your head, you can say that. Hey, I'll do what you tell me. I'll give you my wallet. But I want you to know you're doing it under, you got a gun to my head, okay? I'll give it to you, but
exactly.
You got a gun to my head.
So you, if I did it that way, and I'm just kind of asking, do you think that they may try to come back to me, either the IRS or the employer, and say, hey, look, we got you in a perjurious situation, now we're going to drop the hammer on you?
They could. Absolutely they could. You better believe they could. That's exactly why I told you to write above your signature under duress. So, learning, you can
okay.
tell the jury why you did it. If they take you before a jury and with all this, you can exactly explain all this stuff. Yeah, I didn't want to do it. I told them I didn't want to do it. They forced me. They put a gun to
mm-hmm.
my head, essentially. You
so
want to make that known on paper. You want to document that on paper.
Would that
okay?
protect me if I were to go into court, do you think?
Yes. Great degree, yeah. Because if you just simply tell that to the jury, they may not believe you. Oh, he's just making it up. But if the form that the government is using against you, it's there already, way back then, and say, well, yeah, he did put it down. Heck, he made it. He wrote it down. It's small print. There wasn't much room in there, but he did write it down. So when you tell them, explain it in detail, they believe you because, well, duh. You've
uh-huh.
noted it in writing.
Okay. Alrighty. Well, that gives me a good perspective. I appreciate that.
You're most welcome, Jack.
Thank you, sir.
You are most welcome, folks. Without that, I want to say good night to you all. And I invite you again to contact Freedom Law School. We're going to get you mail out these education packages. The speech of Joel Bannister on CD is available. For free, I mail it out to you. You can have tell your friends go on and put type Joel Bannister and all his speech at our Freedom Rally. Will come up on video. But guess what? Most people do not have the time, will not make the time to watch it. They can listen to it in their car if they, you know, through YouTube on the Bluetooth of their car radio, they can do that. You can give this to them the link, hey, watch it and listen in your car. Listen, which is fine. Or give them the CD, it's easier, whichever way. Give them that education, wake them up to what's going on, folks. Smell the reality. We lost our government, we lost our country. We got to get it back. They've enslaved you. You want to be free again? We got to do something about it. Otherwise, it won't change. So with that, folks, I want to tell you there's hope. With education and cooperation amongst us as Americans, we'll be in touch. You stay in touch with Freedom Law School. Work with us. Work with other like-minded freedom seekers. We can get our country back to freedom once again. Have you be free. And have America be a free country once again. Thank you for listening, everybody. Have a good night. I'll be back with you again next week. Tell your friends and coworkers to join our call. Or you can download this call, listen to it later on at your convenience again whenever you want. Good night, everybody.